You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan from the Sunday Independent. I'm talking with Pat Shore. Pat, Merry Christmas. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you, Barry. Happy Christmas.
Just, let's go back to, not quite your childhood, but thereabouts. Like, you grew up in a house full of music.
Yeah.
Your dad played the fiddle. Your mother played the piano. There was instruments everywhere.
Yeah.
But you never played together as a family.
No, it's a strange one. Because everyone has this perception, especially with a family that are all musicians, that, gosh, there must be great cracking evenings and you're all playing tunes and you're baiting the shite out of one another nearly all the time, and you're fighting over clothes and fighting over wanting another. You very rarely would, you know, we found it very strange to play together. Now, that said, my older sisters were all in an orchestra and that kind of thing. That was the style of music they were playing, I suppose, doing music in school and that. Whereas the younger gang, we were in a brass band and we played in the band together, but very rarely brought the instruments home to play at home. And then at home, we were playing traditional music, I suppose. My dad was a fiddle player. My mum had died when we were very young, but I think her influence was on the piano and wanting us all to play piano, because she had played piano herself. And she had got us all...
Was the piano ever touched after she died?
Oh, God, it was, yeah. Yeah, gosh, my couple of my brothers were really accomplished piano players. And I played it myself. I played piano since I was six for years. We all played piano.
Did you play the piano for your kids at home?
Oh, God, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a centrepiece in our house. And my daughter is an amazing piano player at the moment, Lily. So it does carry on. I mean, it's funny. My dad had this thing of never teaching any of his music, you know, which was really funny.
He wanted you to learn it yourself.
Music, but and I think it was kind of a good idea in some respects. He didn't want to put us off music. And he thought if he was teaching us and one of us didn't, had an argument with her or something, we'd go, feck you and feck your instrument and feck your music and everything and throw it back at him and never touch it again. So he got his music lessons with other people and stuff like that. And he'd always be there to help us. But I remember asking him to teach me some stuff and the Tim Whistler, he said no.
And you picked up the saxophone. Did you hear stuff? Was it like...
I was in the brass band and I was playing different instruments. And then it's typical. I think this is the first time I ever said this. you get the best out of me, buddy. There was a girl involved. I was 15. And I think, was it Careless Whispers or something?
You learned that?
No, that was the piece of music and everyone was always mad about it. And there was a lot of saxophone pieces in the 80s and around there, Hall & Oates and a couple of others, you know, in the pop music genre. And so I picked up the sax. I was playing flute and it's the same fingering, so I picked up, there was a saxophone at home in the house.
<He's> Sorry. I said nothing.
It was the look for radio. You can't you can't do that. We're not internet here. But yeah, no, so it's the same, it's the bone method of playing for the technocrats out there. But so it was the same thing, just a different approach to it. And my dad was a saxophone player as well, so there was a couple of saxophones in the house and I picked that up and started playing it. But I really got into the sax.
But was your dad wondering why his son was suddenly learning Careless Whisper?
I don't think I ever learned Careless Whisper. Yeah, I did. Well, I suppose he would have been thrilled to see one of us playing the saxophone. I did a program recently called Who Do You Think You Are? And on that, we traced back my granduncle Brendan. We used to call him Brendan. Brendan Short. But I learned to play on his saxophone and his flute.
Yeah.
And he had left them to my dad. And he had played he played Albert Hall in London and stuff like that. He was in the Frank Lee Cayley band. I have to say it slowly because when I was saying it on the TV show, they were saying, it's not Frank Lee, Pat, it's Frank Lee. Frank Lee, my dear. His instrument was in the house and my dad was delighted to see me taking an interest in it. But I must say I loved the sound of the saxophone and jazz, and I got completely...
And where did the comedy start?
I loved comedy. Neil Tamin in particular, A Horse for a Weekly, all that kind of stuff, just the sketch-related stuff. And I loved John Kenny's stuff on TV. I thought the madness and the...
You were drawn to the kind of daftness of it.
Daftness and rural and that kind of... Like when Neil Tamin would tell stories about the cabman or the Kerry man or something like that, and then he'd do the accents and everything. I just thought it was absolutely incredible.
Was there a reason why you were drawn to the daftness? I'm just curious that your mother died when you were seven. Mm. Was the comedy a way of not dealing with just laughter?
I don't think I would have thought that much.
To go underneath the surface.
I know what you're saying. I don't really think I thought it through that much, to be honest with you. We used to be just daft. And look, when you go back to the 70s, you don't need your mother to die. There was lots of other reasons to be depressed.
But your mother died, you were seven. Your three sisters went off to college, and you were left in the house
with seven boys. Yeah,
yeah, and your father. That's a lot of men running around the house being
daft and mad. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
how did your dad cope? There's 11 siblings and he was on a teacher's wage.
Yeah. I don't know, to be honest with you, Barry, because when you're a teenager, you're very self-centred. So all I was worried about was me. So I never thought about my dad. I never worried about him.
Every time he came home, we'd hear you rehearsing Careless Whisper for the latest Mott.
Something like that. I'm going to go with
you. You didn't marry her or anything like that?
No, I didn't. But it must have been very difficult for him. I have to, looking back on it now, I've got three kids and I couldn't imagine being left on my own with three, don't mind 11. But it's probably too easy to say this, but it's probably just, it was of the times as well. And people got on with things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And do you have any memories of your mother? She had cervical cancer. She was sick and in and out of hospital for a year.
Yeah, I've very, very scant memories of her now, to be brutally honest, because she was in and out of hospital and because there was so many younger and so many kids around. You just went off and played and did your own thing, so you wouldn't have been aware of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, when there's that many kids in the house and everyone's playing and out doing things and stuff like that, and you're not aware of the situation that's going on, you don't take much notice of it until it all stops. And then you go, gosh, what was going on there and who was what? And, you know, and you try to think of the memories you have of going when you were a kid going to...
What are the memories?
Well, I have memories of going to Nina Hospital. That was where we went for checkups as kids do, as I would have gone with my own kids to hospitals or surgeries or doctor's clinics, getting teeth checked and getting, you know, whatever done, whatever kids get done, you know what I mean, and jabs and shots and stuff. And they were kind of the only times you were on your own with her, if you know what I mean. So I have memories. She was a great woman for buying us all dinkies. So when you went to a hospital or someplace for a checkup or something like that, you got a dinky on the way home. So that was a big, big, big deal to us.
And you can remember the day she came home from the hospital to effectively die.
I do, yeah. I, of course, didn't realise that's what was happening, but I do remember it. She was sitting in the kitchen and my dad was there and we all came in one by one, gave her a big hug, and it was kind of funny and awkward and giggly and, you know.
You also remember that she was quite upset.
Yeah, she was upset, and it was unusual and funny and awkward, if you know what I mean, as a kid.
Because there's a lot to take in, you don't understand.
Well, I didn't know what was going on. Yeah. I had no idea. I didn't know until the following morning when I got up. A few days later when I got up out of bed and I was told she was dead, I didn't know she was dying.
Did you understand what that was?
No, no idea at all.
When did you realise that she was never coming back?
As the day progressed, you began to realise that this is a very serious thing. I think you fed off reactions of the older siblings when some of them just broke down. You began to realise this isn't going to end well, this is not right, you know what I mean? And that's the way these things happen when you're that age. It starts becoming... I mean, I genuinely didn't take in the whole thing maybe for a year afterwards or so, you know,